By the way, so the current Super Meat Boy speedrun record is 17 minutes and 27 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's been held for 7 months as of this recording. Do you think someone could do better?
Well, you can always do better, for sure.
Ooh, shots fired.
Hello, I'm Edmund McMillan, and I got invited onto this podcast, and I'm here to talk about things.
Thank you for joining us.
I made, what did I do? If anybody knows me, they know me from Indie Game the Movie, probably. If they don't know me from that, it's from Meat Boy, or probably The Binding of Isaac. I doubt you just know me from the stuff I've released in the past 2 years, though.
I do.
Some people might know me from a game called Gish that I released 15 years ago.
Yes.
I've been doing this for a little while.
And thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I actually recently played The End Is Nigh, so I do know you from that.
That's a good game. It's my most underrated game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Okay, so this is the first podcast, and I'm your host, Asterios Kokonos, and with me, as always, is Sarantia. Joe, hi, introduce guys. Yourself.
My name's Joe. I'm going to be your co-host today, and with me, as always, I have Lars.
So let's get right into it, because there's a bit of a time crunch for this one. One of the hallmarks of an Edmund McMillan game is its high difficulty. And I have a guess as to why this is the case, but can you explain the motivation behind that?
I'd say number one is I just want it to be challenging so it feels rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like games that are too easy that just... A lot of games these days are just vehicles for a story. Which I think is a mistake, because for the most part, you know, a movie or even a book will do that better. With a game, I think it's about the interaction with the player, and I think that you leave more of a lasting impression if you do something that actually makes the player feel like they've done something difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my goal is not to crush anybody. I really don't. I don't think my games are that. I mean, The End Is Nigh is pretty hard, but
yeah.
Outside of The End Is Nigh, I don't go for that like intentionally. I just want to make sure that I don't feel like I'm being condescending or, you know, basically telling the player, I don't think you're good enough for higher difficulty. I just want to talk to them like they're on my level and I believe in them and leave a lasting impression. I just feel like there's not much of a point in playing things that are super easy, but maybe that's just me.
Well, I mean, I think there's room for easy games, but I personally enjoy a more difficult game usually, especially ones where, like with Super Meat Boy, there's not like a huge cost to dying. Like you just start right back up, you know. So
yeah, I'm not in the game of making things frustrating.
Yeah,
I think that's a bad design choice when you have frustration. I mean, I want it to be a challenge, but I don't want it to be crushing, and I don't want you to constantly do the same thing over and over again to the point where it feels like there's no way I can do this.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Joe, you said you wanted to kind of switch off on questions. You can go now. We'll just go back and forth.
Do you play other people's games?
Yeah.
And what are you into?
Yes, I do. I play other people's games for sure. I mean, I don't play as many video games as I used to, for sure. I play a lot of retro games. But currently, the games I play the most are Overwatch, Pokemon Go, and Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. I play a lot of board games. Outside of that, I'll play whatever really, like, there's a, you know, a select number of developers like Derek Yu or John Blow or Terry Kavanaugh or Matt Thorson, whose games that I will always play when they release a new game.
Yeah.
And recently, the last game that I played that really wowed me was Baba Is You. I haven't played the Goose game yet. I hear good things. I'll probably check it out eventually. But usually I'm working, you know, so if I'm not working making games, then I will usually just want to play social games. Like, so I play Overwatch and Pokemon with my wife and other friends.
And then sort of a follow-up question, Do you prefer games that have like a goal or a point, or more open-ended games such as maybe The Sims or something like that?
I prefer more open-ended replayable games for sure. Mm-hmm. Multiplayer games and that sort of stuff too. I'm not a big fan of story-driven games. Like Death Stranding doesn't do anything for me. I really did not enjoy Red Dead Redemption at all.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you heard it here first.
Those games just don't do anything for me. Like, I try. I really do. I buy the game and I play it, and it's like, I'd rather be doing anything else. But, I mean, I like the original Fallout series and the first 3D one I played and really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always a chance, but I don't like to feel... I like to feel like I'm more in control, not really on the rails, and...
Yeah,
I don't care. I just don't care about story in games, really, honestly. Like, I care about theme. I care about the texture of what you're selling me, you know, and I care about how much control I have over it.
Quick note, there's a lawnmower going off in the background. I don't know if you guys can hear it. I think it's getting picked up on the recording, but it's at like minus 40.
Lawnmower guy, this is not a good time on the podcast. We're doing a recording.
Lawnmower, now's not a good time. I'm doing a recording.
All right.
That should take care of that.
By the way, so the current Super Meat Boy speedrun record is 17 minutes and 27 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's been held for 7 months as of this recording. Do you think someone could do better?
Well, you can always do better, for sure.
Ooh, shots fired.
Okay. It's all about, you know, not fucking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt that that'll get beat. And I watched the speedruns for The End Is Nigh as well, and that's pretty ridiculous, too. Especially like the no death. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how those people do it. I think they're taking some sort of mood stabilizer drug to like loosen up. And
do you think there's like a bottom floor for the Super Meat Boy record?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I watch that sort of stuff and I do see there's always a teeny tiny fraction of a second that can always be shaved off of these perfect things. And people will find better ways to do better, you know, crazier things. But I mean, some of these levels aren't even played. These just glitch through the wall and it ends. You know?
Yeah.
So it's so bizarre.
Do people ever surprise you with the tricks that they do?
Of course. I think Meat Boy has been the most surprising. I didn't even realize like how many weird, I don't know what you call them, like glitchy, buggy, clipping exploits there were in the game. I had no clue. And I was the one who playtested the hell out of that more than anybody before it released. And I was, you know, I was rubbing up against walls and trying to push through things and I never got anywhere. So it's kind of surprising to see. So I definitely didn't expect that, but it's also a little magical, you know, it makes it feel like it's somehow more of a legit game when you can break it like Mario.
Mm-hmm. So when you saw somebody do that for the first time, like glitch through a wall, did you immediately know, oh, it must be because of this line of code, or did you have to like think about it for a long time and be like, how did they do that?
Well, I didn't. I don't program, so I have no clue. When something like that happens, I'm not sure exactly why. I just know I have some clue why. I remember there was a clipping issue in the game when you ran it windowed, and I actually utilized that for an ARG for Portal. Where you had to like stuck inside this box, and the only way to get out of it to see this code below was to fall through the wall, through the floor. And the only way to do that was to like literally grab the window in windowed mode and shake it around until you fell through.
Interesting. Okay.
So I knew stuff like that was definitely doable, but I always assumed that it would only happen, you know, due to lagging, you know? So I didn't know that you could simulate that in some weird way, or you find exploits to get through walls and stuff like that in game without doing that.
Okay.
Well, that's the next question. Okay. Do you have any thoughts on Super Meat Boy Forever?
I probably shouldn't have any thoughts. Okay. I left the company 4 years ago. They're doing their thing. And I hear what people say. I'm not going to comment on it.
Okay.
And it is what it is. I wish them the best. I, of course, want to see success with a character that I made.
Yeah.
But I'm not a part, so I don't really see it. I have no control over it. So, you know, if it has any issues, don't blame me. And if it's amazing, don't credit me.
Yeah, we didn't want to push you on that. We just we had to ask. So
For sure. No worries.
Okay, so let's talk about the big game at the moment. The Legend of Bumbo just came out, and it's getting good reviews. A lot of people are playing it, but I do have to say it. So hearing the term deck building roguelike is bound to turn some people off. And for people like that, what about Bumbo do you think makes it worth checking out anyway?
I actually didn't think that would see that for me. That's a big turn on when I I hear that. For others, I mean, I assume that people would like it. I actually leaned away from the honest, you know, genre description, which would be, you know, a casual match puzzle game.
Yeah.
Which is what it is, but it's not something that I felt comfortable pitching because I don't want that kind of, there's more negativity centered around that. But in all honesty, like I went in knowing that I was working in a genre that people that play my games don't really like.
Yeah.
But it was a challenge and I wanted to make something really unique and cool. And I felt like it was kind of like there was so much I could do with it. It felt kind of untouched. I mean, for the most part, Bejeweled type games just fall into that category of, you know, free to play, but they'll abuse you in order for you to get high score to beat your friends. Like in it.
Yeah.
And the game semi plays itself. You just click one thing and then you cross your fingers and you see a bunch of combos go off and you feel good about yourself. It just felt like there's a lot that could be done with that, you know, and then that no one was really exploring it and everybody wrote it off as just, you know, mindless fun. And I thought, well, I think I could take this and make a casual game that is something that I would play because I don't really play casual games. And that was it. I mean, that was the foundation of what I was building off of, which was I want to challenge myself. I want to make a puzzle game. I want to make a casual game that won't be casual at all. And for the most part, you know, outside of the launch issues that we had, the response that we've been getting is pretty insane. And the sales that we've been getting is nuts. Like it's in the first week, it sold more than Meat Boy sold in the first month.
Wow. Wow.
So it's like
crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. And I'm pretty blown away. And I'm at this point where like, okay, yeah, for sure. We're going to do DLC. I'm going to do some updates. We're improving the game as much as possible. I didn't expect so many people to grab onto it, but there were a few things that happened during the end of development that made me think like, wait, like, could this be like my most accessible game I've ever done? Like because of its casual design, even though it's not really casual. I don't know. It's strange. It's like having my like sister-in-law who doesn't play video games get so into it that she put 40 hours into the game in testing. Is weird. It was really strange. So I thought, okay, well, me going in, it's just, I'm going to design the best game I could make. Me and James worked on it for almost 4 years. It was a very long dev cycle, probably the longest of any release game that I've put out. Mm-hmm. And my first 3D game, my first puzzle game, going in blind and challenging myself as a designer. And I guess I did something right, but I'm still learning as we go. Like, honestly, like I'm learning the meta of the game and learning how it plays still. And I hope I can make it even better.
Do you remember how many it sold on the first day?
I think it sold like 40,000 on the first day.
Wow. Fancy.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Are you pleased with the final product?
I'd be more pleased if we updated with more stuff. It was like when we launched, it was rough. Like the last, so behind the scenes, how it looks is we've got to get this game done by the end of the year. If not, there's like no point in launching it until summer because it's like no one's going to buy anything usually in January and February. And James, this is like his first big game and he really needed money. He felt like he was been trapped in this hell for almost 4 years and he really wanted to finish it. So he said, okay, let's lock it down. We're going to set a date 2 months ahead of where we're at. I think we can totally do it. It's cutting a little close, but we can definitely get it done. And then we just buckled down and worked. And it was one of the craziest crunches since Super Meat Boy. Like I haven't crunched like that since then. And we did what we could. And then during the last month, there was power outages in California. Yeah. And we actually lost power for 7 days in the last month of development here, which sucked. And then, you know, James had some personal things going on and on his side too, that kind of pulled him away. And by the time we'd already locked it down, we already had like a really hard date that we had announced and I made a trailer for and everything else like that. Then we started taking pre-orders and it was just kind of like, okay, well, I think we can cram 2 weeks into 1 week. We'll try and we'll see if we can do that. If not, we'll just update as much as we can at launch. And we had 20 testers and we got all the bugs that they had reported. So it was kind of surprising when we launched and there were a bunch of soft locks that people were running into, but we patched like 75% of the soft locks out of the game in the first 24 hours. And by the end of the first week, we were down to like, there's like one soft lock that's still floating around that we're trying to figure out. And we've updated it with a bunch of other features that people have requested, but it's one of those things where I look at it now and it, a lot of people are like, why didn't you do, what's it called where it's in development on Steam?
Early access.
Yeah. Why didn't you do early access? Number one is because I'm not even that familiar with it. The stuff started going early access a few years back while we were working on this, and I'm not super familiar with early access stuff, and how it all works and how you would announce that. But, you know, a lot of people consider it to be semi early access, for the first week of,
yeah,
of release, and which kind of sucks. What can you really do? You know, like, all I can do is be transparent about what happened, mm-hmm, and just show people that we really believe in the product and that we're up to, updating as much as possible. And so from here to the end of the year, I really want to prove to people basically that, like, we really believe in this and that we want to go above and beyond what people have expected at launch.
That's really refreshing to hear. I feel like a lot of developers kind of just put out a game and then, like, if there's problems with it, you know, boohoo. But
yeah,
but yeah, I appreciate the commitment. Joe, do you want to take the next one, or should we bust out the sponsor?
let's bust out the sponsor.
Okay. Audible is a book service that can get you a free book today.
A free book today?
Yeah. This sounds super scripted, but it's true. Audible wants to offer you a free audiobook today. No strings attached. If you want to keep it and ditch the service, you can. Or you can stick around with them. They got really great monthly offers. But they just want to give you a free book. That's it today. Anything from the Amazon audiobook library is yours. If you go to audibletrial.com/T1podcast, it helps support the show.
audibletrial.com/T1podcast.
And you get someone to read to you, which I don't have time to read books, like physical books.
God, can you imagine having time to read physical fucking books?
Edmund doesn't have time to read physical books either. He's doing Bum Book Crunch.
It's true. It's true. I actually only listen to audiobook stuff at this point.
Absolutely. Guys, you got to get an audiobook today at audibletrial.com/T1podcast. That's going to do it for the sponsor today. Thanks to Audible. And let's move on with the questions.
Yeah. So my question is that I'm sure at this point you've been courted by any number of major game studios who want you to come work for them. But it seems you're committed to staying independent. Is there any particular reason for that?
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, that's the whole point of being independent.
Exactly.
I don't want to work with any. I don't want to work for anyone. I don't want to be told what to do. I don't want to be in a situation where I could be fired. Mm-hmm. And I want complete creative control over everything that I'm working on. Yeah. Or, you know, that's just always been my thing. Like, I started out making comics independently, just me, when I was 15. And that went on until I was 20. And I started doing websites and, you know, interactive Flash stuff, and then eventually games. And it was always like, I knew I would never, well, it's weird to say that now, but I knew I would never make a good living off of it at all. Mm-hmm. And I was fine with that, accepted the fact that that was going to be that way. But I couldn't see myself working for somebody, because who would listen to me? Like, who in the world would listen to any of the ideas that I've ever had for video games? Who would do that? Like, no one would. So I have to prove it myself. And the only way I could do that is if I was completely independent. So, I mean, it's a common thing that I get asked, especially by people who work in the industry and stuff, and are like, okay, like, I remember when I was starting out and Super Meat Boy had come out and it was successful. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, so now you can get a job. It's like, wait, no. Like, no, the opposite of that. Like, that means I don't have to get a job. Like, if yeah. I ever got a job working for a company or whatever else, I conceded, you know, I've given up. Like, I've given up trying to live the dream, and I've just moved into being a consultant or whatever else, which is fine. You know, do what you're going to do. I know a lot of other developers who haven't really made games in a while and end up doing a lot of consulting work, and there ain't no shame in making money. But for me, it's not what I'm into. Like, I really want as much freedom as I can.
What if they offered you some studio offered you a position of, like, head architect?
you could offer me everything, millions of dollars to come work at a studio. I would never, ever do it. Like, literally $10 million. You could say $10 million. You'd be the head of a studio, have complete creative control. No.
What about $1 trillion?
$1 trillion? I'll do it.
Okay, so everyone has a price, right. I guess.
No, everyone has a price.
I may do it for $1 billion.
Okay. All right.
All right.
But not 10. Not 10 million. Okay. Fuck off with that $10 million.
No. What about 100 million?
Yeah. 100 million? No, I still wouldn't do it.
See, Joe's trying to figure out your price because he wants to buy you out, is what he's saying. Yeah.
I would do it for 500 million.
Okay.
Right. I think I do.
There
that.
You heard it. There you, there
you heard
you
it here first, folks.
I'm just jockeying for the amount of money that I would need to not actually do anything and hire a bunch of people that could just do my work and then I would leave.
Just hire managers and then still do your side hustle.
I want enough money to hire. I would just make this super mega indie company where I would take all of the people that I've listed of developers that I love and I would give them, I would spread out more than half of what I would get, and I'd just pay them that, and then they can make their own games, and I just fund all their stuff, and then I'd walk away.
What was the first language or like software program that you learned how to use that started it all?
I can't remember what the first one I think I learned is Click and Play, but there was another ASCII one that I learned. It was like a Game Maker ASCII game thing. And the first thing I did was make my school. It was like a super cringy, like everybody thought I was going to be some school shooter for sure, but I made my school in ASCII, and like you would break into different places in the school and there'd be, you know, ASCII giant teachers that you'd fight. And then I made a game based on my comics when I was 15, I think, within Click and Play, which was called Build the Lower Intestine. And I started just making weird little interactive stuff. But I never really thought, I honestly never thought I'd make games. I got really into the Duke Nukem 3D mod community stuff. I got really into mods and I loved making levels.
That reminds me, are you familiar with a game called Descent?
Of course. I used to play Descent via modem with my friends.
Oh, okay. I don't know why it just popped in my head. I remember like back in the day, I like remade my church in Descent. The level builders for that were so cool. Like it was just fun to make a map on there. So like I can actually totally relate to that.
It didn't make sense that like as a kid, I always saw making a video game was you were one of 100 people working on this large project. And it didn't seem like I would have much to offer and no one would listen to me either way. So it seemed like that was pointless. Like I fell into it. I honestly didn't even realize I was making video games. I just thought I was making funny flash animations that had minor interactivity. And
if you had to start today, like let's say you were
Joe,
you
know, it's my turn to ask a question. Shut up.
It's a follow-up question. I mean, I don't want to change the subject and come back,
okay.
You know, and
all right,
derail
fine.
It.
That's fine.
Be zigzagging.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask what software you would learn today if you were in the same situation today.
Now that Flash is dead.
Yeah.
Dead and gone. I would learn Game Maker.
Okay.
I would just go with Game Maker. And that's what people usually ask too. Like, again, I'm not a programmer, but I'm a designer. And you don't need to know a lot of programming in order to get into Game Maker and make it happen. So I'd probably jump in there. I usually, when people ask me like, hey, I'm new to this. I don't know if I'm going to like video games, making video games or not. What should I do? Just get Game Maker. Like seriously, like you could go get WarioWare DIY and know if you want to make games or not. If that's something that moves you and you're really into it and you end up making like 50 little mini games, then move on to Game Maker and start making more mini games.
All right. By the way, someone on the tweet, the promotional tweet for this named Jim Fredrickson asked, can you please say my name on the stream? And since he was the only one to do it, sure. Why not? Hello to Jim Fredrickson on Twitter. Thanks
Jim
for tuning in.
Jim Fredrickson.
Sounds familiar.
Also, guys, if you're enjoying what you're listening to and you want to tune into these live, go to discord.t1podcast.com. We record all of these live on the server. And we have lots of fun guests like Edmund McMillan and more. Let's get on with the questions. Is it your turn or my turn, Joe?
I don't know. I mean, we have a list of questions, but then we ask side questions. Yeah. I think the last one we asked
I think you've been hogging the questions. I think I'll go ahead and take it.
You go ahead. Of course. All right. By all means, Lars.
Okay. So, okay, this is a question my dad wanted me to ask. What's something people wouldn't expect about the indie game development life?
Wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
I think going in, especially like, I think this is something that I heard James say a lot when he was deep into, you know, 3 years in development. Indie development's lonely. It's very lonely. It's very isolating. You have to be very driven and you have to be ready to sacrifice a great deal. Like there's a lot of sacrifice involved in order to get things done, even if you are successful. And I think another thing people don't really realize too is that your chance of success is so small.
Yeah.
So incredibly small. I mean, there's always the, I think most people can, they know going in, it's all about being honest with yourself and knowing your limits, knowing your ability and knowing how good whatever you're working on is and being honest about that. There's a lot of people who throw their lives away literally working on a game for 10 years and it just doesn't, it works for them. It's fun to work on, but once they start showing people aren't reacting. And then of course, if and when they ever release it, it's just not going to, it's just going to fade off into nothingness. You got to be really honest about that. You have to try to at least make something. If your goal is to make a living off of games, you have to make something that speaks to someone. You have to find an audience and you've got to do a lot of other things that you wouldn't expect that you should be doing. Like you have to learn how to talk like this on podcasts. Yeah. You have to learn how to interact with business people. Like you have to know how to network and all the bullshit that goes along with it that you don't want to do, but you have to do because you're just one or two people. You have to be able to do all of this stuff and, you know, strategically going about everything as you would game design in real life also really helps. Like you optimize your life and you live poor and you take extra jobs and, you know, you do what you can to get stuff done. Like there were many times where right before I had enough money to save up for Super Meat Boy development, which ended up not having enough. Mm. I was working at GameStop and then also working at home and then also working in an office with the guy I made Gish with and like bouncing around all these places. I finally was able to quit GameStop and just do contract illustration work exclusively. So I would still be doing that. So I would do that. So I'd be doing illustration work, contract work, going to an office for 6 hours with somebody else, ended up not making any money doing that, paying rent for that, coming home, working on my own projects at night, and then finishing up more contract work. And I somehow did that while I was married. And I don't know how I was able to stay married doing that. So there's just, there's a great deal of sacrifice and a huge amount of work for very little back. So you need to be, you need to go in already enjoying it. And like, I'm doing it because I can't do anything else. Like I need to do this. Like I need to be creative in order to survive. So it's not a question. It makes me happy and it makes me feel like I'm worth something. Luckily it also pays bills, but for a good 10 years, it did not. So you have to be ready for it.
Okay. Joe, the next question is kind of a natural follow-up to that, honestly.
Well, actually, I had somewhat of something of a follow-up question, maybe to interject really quick.
Okay.
Would you say, and this, I don't know, I hope this doesn't sound weird, but would you say that working on multi-year like indie game projects is like having a baby? Like you're brewing it, you know, you're at first you're like excited and then maybe the last months come and there's the crunch and you're like, oh, this is tough. I never want to have a baby again. And you're delivering the baby and it's the most amazingly painful thing, but then you forget about the pain.
It feels a lot like that. I mean, it's not as difficult as having a baby. I can tell you that from experience. And it lasts a lot. It's a shorter lifespan for the most part, but And in some ways, yes, it's more like being whisked away with a friend and you guys have so much in common and you're making this literally this big project together. And it's this cool thing that you only you and this other person are sharing and you bond over it and it's a special thing. And then it's done and it's ripped out of your arms much, you know, and then everybody judges it and everybody holds it up, you know, inspects it and then tells you how terrible you are for creating it. And, and then gives you a list of things you could have improved on this thing. So yeah, release is always, even if reception is amazing, release is always difficult. You sit there idling because you've been so busy for so long and then you just sit there and you don't know what to do. And like, in a lot of ways, being able to work more on Bumbo was a blessing because it kind of avoided, which I know the eventual pocket of depression will hit. Like, oh, I got to replace this with something else. Because if you don't replace it with something else, you're just going to sit there and you're going to just sink. And that's always been the case for me. That's why I think I tend to do a lot of projects and stack things together because it keeps me away from the really big fall. But from what I've seen with other developers, they feel mostly the same way.
So it's kind of just you need to be productive is what you're saying. Like you need to feel like you're contributing something to the indie game. Okay. I can definitely relate to that. Like sometimes if we take a week off when we don't do some interviews, I get kind of like, whoa, what am I doing? So I get that.
I mean, in a lot of ways, and that could be something for men in general. Like
Yeah.
We don't have the we don't have the ability to instantly be fulfilled and take care of a child and leave a legacy. You know, mm-hmm. women have the ability to do that, and they do it very well. So I think with men, it's leaving a legacy outside of having a child is very important, and feeling that kind of value. I think men overall feel a great deal of value from working. And from yeah. sacrifice and from mm-hmm. taking a beating, you know, like they, you know, to provide in that way, I think a lot of men feel like that's a high value point.
Yeah.
Which is a self-destructive thing too, and not a healthy thing, but sometimes you can't avoid it.
Yeah. I have a question for you.
My turn, Joe, not yours.
Okay, go ahead. All right. Go ahead.
So, okay. And this is actually kind of a follow-up to what you were previously talking about needing to do this. And it's a question we ask basically all content creators, whether they're game devs or YouTubers or music creators or whatever. Is this something you're still going to be doing like when you're like 75? Like, is this your life mission, or do you eventually want to try new things, or, you know?
I see myself moving away from it for sure.
Okay.
There have been times where I wanted to, and that's kind of what The End Is Nigh was about. It was me questioning, should I keep doing this? Is the stress worth it? Does the negatives outweigh the positives? Like, should I be focusing on family more? You know, and a lot of those questions have been answered for me for the most part. But I see myself eventually probably breaking away from this. I see it getting old at some point, you know, but I see myself also coming back at some point too. You never know. Like, yeah. Making The Four Souls, which is a physical Binding of Isaac card game. I got to make that with just myself and my wife and a few friends. It was super fun. I really liked it. I liked it a lot more than making a digital game. it doesn't pay the bills like a digital game will, but
right.
It was really fun. It was totally worth the time. Even the marketing aspect was really fun, and I got a taste of that, and I kind of want to do it again. And I could see myself one day maybe being moved back towards comics, or even movies or animations, or, you know, whatever I feel is most appropriate for the project that I want to work on. I don't have any great grand ideas of the stuff that I want to do in the future, but there's no doubt in my mind that I'll eventually grow tired of the industry. Well, I've always grown tired of the industry. I'm not a big fan of the industry and the way things have been going for the most part. But yeah, eventually I'd like to go do other things, but I don't have any ideas right now.
Okay. Yeah, I could totally see you doing a movie of some sort, like an animated, like kind of macabre project. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So your game's excluded. Do you have a vote for the best indie game ever made?
My favorite indie games of all time are Spelunky, World of Goo. Mm-hmm. I really like Braid. I like The Witness as well. Anything by John Blow. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe Spelunky.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that game. I hear it's just like the replay value is off the charts, and it's just like a lot of fun to play.
It's a game for a very specific type of person, and I'm that person. Mm-hmm. It's a game for definitely a game for developers.
Yeah,
and I've noticed a lot of other developers really, really into it.
Are you familiar with Game Maker's Toolkit?
No.
Okay, never mind. I was gonna say like one of the big like developer channels on YouTube is Game Maker Toolkit, and he talks about the game all the time. But if you don't know what that is, we can move on. All right, so. What's something that you think AAA games are doing wrong and could take a lesson from the indie game scene?
Taking risks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's quite it. AAA games don't take risks because they're investing millions of dollars. And if their game doesn't make millions of dollars, everybody gets fired and their game fails and their company goes under, you know, so they don't take risks. It's as simple as that. I mean, that's what indie developers have over AAA games is the ability to take risks and do genre defining games. And I think that we've done that really well for quite a while now. We open up doors for AAA developers to kind of jump into for the most part. But you know, it's really commendable when I see certain things like Breath of the Wild, or even the art style that they went for in Wind Waker. Those are big risks for a large company to take. Nintendo does take big risks, and I think it's commendable in that respect. So yeah, I always, you know, give kudos where kudos is due for the most part, but I also understand why they can't, because there's a shitload of people that will lose their jobs if they fail, and it happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The question I was going to ask earlier, is when you're brainstorming a game, What is that process sort of like, or how long does that take to brainstorm the entire game? And do you do that before starting any design at all, or do you kind of read?
I think it is a mistake to brainstorm the entire game.
Oh,
I know other people would argue against that, but the way I work is I have a foundation. I have a core foundational goal of what this game wants. Like with Legend of Bumbo, it was deep strategy. Everything had to be turn-based strategy, mm-hmm. you know, multiple steps ahead. Everything had to be, you know, 1+1=2 formula, and it should be very clear. That was the foundation I was building off of. How I achieved that stuff is open-ended. You know, you go with what works, you experiment, you assume, and then you throw it out there and see if it actually sticks. I do the same with story as well and theme. I let the game find what it wants, and I leave things open-ended in order to not only make a more improvised game that, you know, feels like it's more like liquid, like it flows as we go alongside me. And, but it also is more fun to work on because you don't know everything. Like I know a lot of AAA developers, they actually have to sit down and brainstorm a whole game, and they have everything mapped out start to finish exactly how it's going to work, because you need to optimize, you know, your roles. So you'd have team A go and start doing all the cutscenes for this, and then team B go and get all the physics ready for this, and then team C has this mini game working, and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But with indie developers, you just got two people either way, and you go start to finish for the most part. And it's more fun. It makes me more engaged in the game, leaving it open-ended and allowing the game to find what it likes as we go. And it makes itself very apparent as you experiment. I don't think any game that I've have an idea of what I want from the very beginning has actually been that in the end, because usually the game will steer you in a direction if you just let go and you just see what it wants, and it's very clear what's more fun, what works better, what themes are more clear, you know, how all things tie together. You know, it's all about being open as an artist and allowing that to kind of come through.
So in other words, why would you plan the whole thing from start to finish when it could change and you don't know what's going to work out yet?
For sure.
That's super interesting.
You run the chance of being wrong. I mean, in a lot of ways with Bumbo, I had a harder time being open-ended with it and just assuming. And the mistake that we made was we didn't do a lot of rapid prototyping in the beginning. We thought it was going to be a simple project, and it turned into be a not at all simple project because it kept kind of growing. And we actually spent a good 8 months plus on exploration in Bumbo, which got completely cut because it did not work with the core design. I thought it did. I assumed that it would. So we started to build it because it made sense to me because I was referencing Isaac. But in the end, that's how Bumbo was different than Isaac. You know, the action-based exploration stuff that was worked in Isaac did not at all work in Bumbo. Bumbo wanted mm-hmm. it to be rigid, on rails, and very formulaic. That's what worked with Bumbo. So we ended up cutting almost a whole year's worth of work mm-hmm. simply to just streamline the game.
Are there any up-and-coming indie devs at the moment that you'd like to shout out for like doing good work?
I don't know who made Baba as You, but I really loved it. Whoever you are, that was really good. It was made something that was very special for sure.
It was made by RV Takari.
Well, RV Takari.
Or he goes by Hempoli, I think. Yeah.
Kudos.
By the way, if anyone in the audience is listening right now and wants to give a question either via text or live, we can go ahead and take some of those. Just go ahead and type something out. We'll give you guys a chance to go ahead and do that.
Lars, cue the Jeopardy music.
Cue the Jeopardy music.
Yeah. Several people are typing.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Someone named Clang is asking, what is Meat Boy specifically made of? Like pork? Or beef or human?
Human. I mean, he's supposed to be a boy without skin, but that, I think they may have rewritten that. I don't know if he's meat, if he's like beef or something now. I don't have any control over what happens with it, so the future is unwritten. But when I made it, when I made it, he was very specifically a skinned boy, and that's why Banded Girl was so significant to him, because she was like his outer shell. It was like this symbiotic relationship of the two.
All right, so Atlas Geneticist asks, Well, I think he has a misunderstanding where he thinks that the end is nigh is Switch only, which it's not. But he's also asking, like, what was the inspiration behind the end is nigh?
Inspiration behind the end is nigh was me. I went through a situation shortly after, I think, leaving Team Meat where I felt like I didn't want to make games anymore. And it was, I felt depressed and frustrated, and I felt like on a constant roller coaster of anxiety. And it felt awful. I always felt like I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it never dropped. And it was just like this impending doom where I knew that the end was in sight, but it never came, and it just kept going and going and going, and it felt more and more punishing. And I wanted to make a game that embodied that stressful element of impending doom and knowing that it's going to end badly and continuing to move forward simply because you had to. And in a lot of ways, rewriting the Meat Boy, with Meat Boy, it was all about challenging yourself for reward. And this was kind of like challenging yourself and questioning the reward. And that's kind of where I went with that. But yeah, Tyler and I made it fairly quickly. It was rough to work on only emotionally when it came to just what I was writing about and trying to embody that in a video game. And I didn't do any press because I felt like I couldn't talk about it. I didn't want to talk about it back then. It just felt too, you know, I really felt like it was my farewell. Like I was saying goodbye to video games, and this was going to be my swan song. This was going to be it. And I ended up releasing it and kind of regaining, there was a glimmer of hope at the end of that, that made me feel like, wait, well, maybe I can do something. And then, and then Four Souls fell out of the sky and then completely rekindled how I feel about games in general.
By the way, this is just a side note. Joe, congratulations.
Oh, you too, Lars. Thank you.
Yeah, because we just hit 2,000 members on the Discord server. Thank you guys for coming to hang out with us.
We hit 2,000 members.
Yay.
Congratulations.
Yay, yes. Thank you.
All right, so a couple more questions from other people are coming in. This is hard to pronounce, but Tzombi, I think, is asking if you're going to add more characters to Bumbo.
Yeah, definitely in like a DLC in the future. There's a bunch of things I'm loosely experimenting right now with that I think would be interesting to do. It's cool to do characters that aren't just like with Isaac. It's just kind of a character with a minor special ability and then an item to start with. But with Bumbo, it's a passive ability that changes the way you play completely, and then a few spells to complement that. So it's a cooler design. It's much more fun to design and much more drastic. Like the Bumbo the Weird plays a hell of a lot different than Bumbo the Nimble. So yeah, I'd love to make more characters for sure.
Okay. And here's a question from Lucas, which I'm not sure if you can answer. If you do have any familiar, or if you are familiar with Brazilian game designers, do you have any thoughts about them in the indie scene?
I mean, I don't know where people come from. So okay. I'm always surprised to know that like this developer is actually from way the fuck out of, I don't know where. There's a lot of Swedish developers. So I don't know anybody offhand. If you told me a game that was made by a Brazilian developer, I could tell you that if I liked it or not. But I do know that Brazil has it rough when it comes to video games in general. It's hard to like get games there, and it might also be hard to make games there with taxes and stuff like that, the rules that they have in place. So maybe in a way, like a lot of Brazilian developers are complete rebels.
Okay. All right. And Grand Ocelot asked a question. He kind of answered it already, which is, do you watch people stream / play your games? Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, about the Super Meat Boy speedrun record. So we kind of got into that already. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, I watch people stream my games, especially on launch. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. Flix is asking, how are Limited Run as a publisher?
I just started talking with Limited Run, so I don't know yet. We're going to be working on a possible Gish. It's the 15-year anniversary of Gish, and we want to do something special with it. We're going to do like a mini doc that goes and, you know, recaps how it all happened, because not many people have actually played Gish, and that was my first award-winning game. That was my breakout hit that gave you guys everything. Like, it was my first sold indie game. And we're revamping it on Steam. We're probably going to do a big sale for it. And then Limited Run is going to publish a physical version of it, which we're working on right now.
Okay.
And so far, they're great to work with.
Another question is, actually, I'm going to add something to it. Is Bumbo coming to the Switch?
Oh, yeah. Bumbo will eventually come to the Switch. We've been talking to No, we don't know yet for sure. I haven't signed anything yet, but we've been talking to a few different publishers, and I think we'd be able to announce who we're going with by the end of the year, and then hopefully it'll come out on Switch within 6 to 9 months of that.
By the way, I've noticed that the Switch seems to be just like a honey of a console for indie games. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I just stars align, you know? It wasn't always like that, you know? It's for a long time, Xbox was the shit, you know? That's when I did Super Meat Boy. That's where the money was, you know? You got Castle Crashers and Braid and, you know, Super Meat Boy and stuff like that coming out on Xbox Live, and that's where everybody was, and then that died, and then everybody moved to PlayStation, and I ended up doing Binding of Isaac for PlayStation, and then now it's Switch. It just flops around everywhere. It was phones for a while too, but now, you know, who's playing actual games on phones?
Shots fired. So Julian in the chat asks, it's kind of confusing wording, but how did you practice in finishing / releasing your Flash games in the beginning? Was it just deadlines, or how did you know when a game was finished to release it?
I wanted to make games. So back in the day, you'd try to get sponsored. And if you got sponsored, you'd get anywhere between a couple $100 to maybe $3,000 if your game was like this big one that you could really haggle and, you know, prove yourself. And it was a paycheck. So I would try to just get the games done as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. And I never designed anything that was too huge. It was always kind of bite-sized. A lot of the games that I worked on and released were in development for 1 to 6 weeks. I had maybe one or two games that were in development for 3 months. Never really big, long projects. It was done when it's done. It depended on how much I wanted to challenge myself and how much I thought that it was going to be worth to somebody for sponsorship.
Okay. Chrono asks, what is your favorite misconception about game development, if you have any?
That you play games all day. And it's just a fun thing. Like, for a very, very long time, my family, before I made money off my games, I didn't make money off my games. I made money off of contract work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when my mom or anybody would visit and I would be on the computer working, you know, in quotes, working, people just thought I was playing games. They just thought I was fucking around. And it wasn't until Meat Boy released and they saw, you know, oh, you know, we're going to buy a house and, you know, this is actually a series. Oh, well, so you actually make money off of the games that you're working on. I see. But no one took it seriously. My mom would visit me with like cut things, newspaper cutouts saying like, look, they're hiring downtown at this full power place. You could be a game developer there. And it's like, but mom, I've been working for a year on the Super Meat Boy game that I'm trying to release independently. And like, I want this to, there's just no, it's hard for people to understand that, you know, when you're taking it seriously.
Yeah. Also, I just think that's kind of how moms are.
It's probably true.
Yeah. Okay.
My mom doesn't even know I do a podcast.
Probably for the best.
Yeah.
Do you, Kevin in the chat is asking, and I'll go ahead and ask a first question. Do you play video games with your daughter? And if so, which ones?
I try. She's 4 right now. Her coordination isn't the best and she gets frustrated easily, but we've played.
Yeah.
I have a little NES mini and we mess around with that and she plays for like 2 seconds and then she's done with it. But for the most part, we play like Candyland. She's gotten really into Candyland. Don't Break the Ice, Gooey Louie. Mm-hmm. You know, a bunch of little kid board games, Hi-Ho Cheerio, really basic stuff that she really likes. So she's just edging into it now.
Are you hoping at some point that she'll be able to beat Super Meat Boy?
Sure. I don't see why she couldn't. My nephews did.
Yeah. But,
you know, I'm not going to force anything on her. I hope she'll gravitate. I surrounded her with Ninja Turtles and a bunch of boy toys. And then she's really into princess stuff and she's really into being super girly.
Yeah, that's
it is what it is. And my wife's not even super girly too, so it's like I just assumed that we'd have this little rough and tumble tomboy, but she's hilarious. But she's very frilly and prissy. I don't know. But she's also tough and she likes being gross and she's really funny and she likes you know, being, you know, mildly inappropriate.
Yeah.
She's gonna always have that edge.
There's a question in the chat which I'm gonna go ahead and modify a little bit here, saying, is there a dream game that you really want to make, but for whatever reason, you haven't yet?
Well, the next game I'm working on, it's called Mugenics, and I've worked on it on and off for quite a long time, and it was kind of stuck in limbo back when it was a Team Meat game, and I couldn't work on it then, and I am going to be working on it probably in the next couple of weeks, I'm gonna start working on it again. I'm working on it with Tyler, who I did The End Is Nigh with in the Basement Collection and Ether. And he has a whole new engine in place. It's going to be a big project, but that has been a dream project since I came up with it forever ago. What, like 8 years ago at this point, I think before The Binding of Isaac, possibly. I've always wanted to do that game, but it was so strange that I couldn't really get other people on board.
What is that game about?
It's a cat breeding simulator. It's a randomly generated cat breeding simulator, Pokemon hybrid RTS brawler. It's the most bloated and weird thing that I've ever come up with, but essentially at its core is this Animal Crossing type game where you breed cats and you utilize those cats as life in order to get through a Binding of Isaac-esque RTS kind of brawler type thing. So if you can imagine like manning three cats that are mildly mutated and have different abilities, and then, you know, there's like an endless supply of different combinations that you can breed. That all have abilities tied to them. You breed them over time, and then you put them out on adventures to go get loot and hoard things for your house. And, you know, they die. When they die, and they're gone forever. So you have to make sure you breed the ones that are important. And then there's a whole little weird town that you interact with. So it's a very different but familiar for anybody who's played my... Like, it's going to be dark, very character-driven, a lot of text dialogue with interactions with other characters, but then the actual meat and potatoes of the gameplay is going to be these randomly generated cats that are visually very, very unique and living little things that you point and click with, and you kill hordes of weird deformed things.
Is it going to be in black and white?
Originally it was going to be black and white. I think I'm going to do in really light tones, so it'll be mostly black and white, super faded, very faded look. I still want to go with that. I pulled back because shortly after announcing it, like a few years after, then Cuphead came out, and it was like, oh, well, they just did what I was trying to do like 1,000 times better, so I'm not going to even attempt that again. But the dust has settled on that enough so I feel like I could probably make something look like an old cartoon a little bit again without, you know, I don't have the ability that, you know, a studio like that does. But it also doesn't really work with randomly generated pieces of a cat because you'd have to animate all those things. That'd be impossible.
Right. Okay. And speaking of which, by the way, since Cuphead is kind of a server/podcast favorite, do you have any thoughts on that game?
I did not ever play it, but I appreciated it for what it did. It's super pretty, and I love what they were referencing because I was going through the same cartoons that they were referencing when I was working on Mugenix to kind of get inspired as well. So I really love the art, but I never got around to playing it. It just looked a little primitive to me when it came to what they were offering. It just felt like a contra-type game with really, really, really good graphics and music.
Okay. All right. If anyone else has any more questions, speak now or forever hold your peace. Also, Joe, did you die?
No, you've just been sort of asking question after question. I can't get a words in edgewise.
All right. That's probably for the best. Okay.
All right. I do have one question.
Sure.
Have you been recognized just randomly walking down the street or something? Just somebody's, oh, I know who you are.
Yeah, it happens a lot. The movie did that for sure. Especially around town, small town, and a lot of people. There's a game design class at UCSE. And I've talked at a few classes over the years. And so there's a lot of game developers in town. Indie developers and who will spot me and talk to me and whatever else. Yeah, it happens still for sure. People still remember. But the funny thing is that for the most part, like if I go, let's say I go over the hill and go to a crowded mall or something, I'll get like spotted once or twice in that day. Mm-hmm. And people will come up to me and be like, hey, Super Meat Boy. I'll be like, yeah. And they're like, hey, do you ever do anything else? I'm like, well, yeah. I made a bunch of other games. I made a game that was, you know, 10 times more popular. Well, what is it? Binding of Isaac. I never heard of it. Well, good luck. And then that's it. And it's like, it's just people who have seen the movie and they're kind of like, they just saw it maybe even recently. And it feels like we just picked up from there. So it's a little surreal in that respect.
That's cool.
All right.
Anything else, Lars?
I mean, I could go on all day with questions, but I think we're getting to a good, solid point. We've been going for about an hour.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, yeah, I'll give the chat the last chance to ask anything else.
Yeah, anyone have a question?
Ooh, here's actually a good one. Okay. So Kronos91 asks, if you could remake any other game, and it's like not your games, but someone else's, what would be one that you would be interested in redesigning or redoing?
I've always wanted to do my take on Mega Man.
Ah.
I would do it randomly generated. I think that would be really neat. I've almost done a game like that a few different times with different characters, but I don't know if and when I'll do that again. What else? I like the Splatterhouse theme. I like the visuals in Splatterhouse. Mm-hmm. I'd love to do my take on that, but of course I wouldn't make the gameplay kind of sucks. Splatterhouse. Yeah. Why is it not a good game? But the visuals and theme was really fun. So something super weird and gory and dark like that, I think I'd love to take a stab at some point. I mean, I'd take a stab at anything, remaking anything. It's just, it's pretty much what I do, you know, like The Binding of Isaac was me remaking Legend of Zelda, but making it a roguelike, and Super Meat Boy was me remaking Super Mario Brothers, but, you know, questioning the difficulty and, you know, that sort of stuff too. And even with Bumbo, you could say it's like me remaking Bejeweled.
What stopped you from making that kind of Mega Man inspired game though?
It was something I was working on with Team Meat.
Oh, okay.
And when I left, that was it.
Okay. All right. I think we can go ahead and wrap things up here and say, first of all, thank you very much, Edmund, for coming to join us. We're huge fans of Super Meat Boy and Binding of Isaac on the server. I think I played Super Meat Boy like for the first time about like 6 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Just fantastic game. I've really enjoyed just being able to pick your brain. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I wasn't more, I mean, I probably just sound cooler with this, my raspy voice, but.
Yeah, you sound super cool, man.
Super cool.
I'm sorry I couldn't be more animated.
No, it's fine. You gave really good answers. I really appreciated it. Joe.
Yeah?
If people have been tuning into the podcast for a while and they wanted to wear us, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the best way to wear us, it's easy, Lars. All they would have to go is, merch.t1podcast.com.
That's right.
You can pick up shirts and little tote bags, sweaters, coffee mugs, whatever you want.
A picture of a coffee table, since you guys requested it for some reason.
Merch.t1podcast.com.
And if people have been tuning in for a while. Yes, go ahead, Joe.
If they've been tuning in for a while and they want to support the show, how could they do that?
They can go to patreon.com/t1podcast to get bonus episodes of the show, early releases for every episode, and a special role in the Discord, and more. As well as the $10 patrons, you get monthly dramatic readings or shoutouts. Every dollar helps. Thank you to our supporters on the First Podcast Patreon. And Edmund, if people wanted to check out The Legend of Bumbo, what's the best way to do that?
Go to thelegendofbumbo.com. There's a dash, /BO, Legend of Bumbo. Or just search it. Go to Steam, okay. Buy it. It's only on Steam right now.
Right now, it's on Steam for $14.99. Go ahead and pick it up today. And he's going to... Ooh, okay. A question I was going to ask. It never came to me. Why the cardboard aesthetic?
If you played the game, you'd know.
Fake fan.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet. Yeah, I have a backlog of games. I'm sorry, Joe.
Play the game and beat the game, and it'll be all apparent. You'll know exactly why cardboard. You'll know exactly why prequel The Binding of Isaac.
Ah, okay. So that's a good incentive to go play it, guys.
You heard it here first.
Legend of Bumbo, only on Steam. This has been Edmund, Lars, and Joe. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love you.